listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
Welcome in to another episode of the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media. As always, I'm your host, Don Knock. And joining me, of course, is my co-host, Paolo Alves. Welcome. Go ahead and say that. Go ahead and say what's up to the people and tell them where they can find your stuff.
What's up, everyone? Y'all can find me at Paolo Alves NBA. That's PAOLOALVESNBA. Everything I do, from podcasts to articles to live shows on Twitter Spaces, will find itself linked on there.
And as usual, on Thursday, we are joined by Jackson Gatlin of Locked On Rockets and Locked On NBA. Jackson, go ahead and tell the people where they can find your stuff as well.
What's up? Happy to be here every Thursday, as always. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. That's where I yell about everything that I do.
Perfect. So we are coming to you guys on an exciting day, a great day. The Rockets beat the newly minted rival of the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is a big game coming in. KPJ spoke about it as much, saying, hey, I got traded from that team, I want to beat them. We had the quotes of him saying, hey guys, you know, because y'all really put in a good effort for me, I want to, you know, come out here with a W. And then of course you have the Mobley Jalen Green rivalry kind of chalked up into that as well. But I want to start somewhere different. I thought somewhere in this game that, you know, we'll see how the narrative kind of comes out of this, but I was really impressed with the lineup that was starting the fourth quarter. I think it was KJ, Tate, Şengün, Christopher, and then Garrison Matthews. I think some combination of those, maybe one other person. But that lineup was in there against Evan Mobley. That's a very undersized lineup. You know, Şengün has some size, but not, you know, he's not even Daniel Tice size, right? He's a smaller guy. And you know, Evan Mobley got some buckets off, but overall they maintained that Rockets lead. They even expanded on it a little bit. And you know, that was really that portion of the game without Jalen, without KPJ in there, they could have gone, you know, kind of either direction. How do y'all feel about, you know, how that unit did, how the team went into, you know, that closing stretch as well, and then we'll kind of circle back around to Jalen and KPJ. But Jackson, we're gonna go to you first. You were in the building for this one, right?
Yeah, no, it's I've only missed one home game so far this season. It was the Knicks game here in Houston. I was like super sick that day, and so I didn't get to go. So I've made it to every single home game so far this year, and I've got to say, this might be my favorite game of the season, honestly, just because that tail stretch, the sequence to close out this game, you kind of saw the Cavaliers making that run and kind of, you know, mounting their comeback a little bit there in the fourth quarter. Evan Mobley gets his, you know, gets that and one bucket on Christian Wood, you know, cuts the lead to three. And you're kind of sitting there thinking, oh man, is this going to, you know, which way are we going? Are we going to go, you know, feel good win? Or are we going to go like, oh, are they going to collapse in the fourth? And we're going to have to deal with all the naysayers on Rockets Twitter who are like, we should have picked Mobley, all this stuff, you know, the Mobley mob coming out of the woodwork to try and slander Jalen Green, all that stuff. And the Rockets responded in such a big way that stretch to close out the game. You know, we saw Christian Wood, we saw Kevin Porter Jr., we saw Jalen Green, we saw Jayshon Tate make some great impressive defensive plays. And I think that was something that really stood out to me, is it was the entire unit collectively making, you know, a sequence of plays both offensively and defensively to seal the game out. But second past that, they didn't rely on Eric Gordon down the stretch of this game. And I think that's something that has been like a factor for this Rockets team in pretty much this entire season, is they've leaned very heavily. And maybe it's a Steven Silas thing. Maybe it's just a, you know, the guys on the court type thing. Maybe it's an Eric Gordon being the veteran, like demanding the basketball type thing at the tail end of, you know, games and whatnot. But they've really relied on Eric Gordon down the stretch of really close games. And he's won them some games down the stretch. But to see them be able to put together that run, you know, and get the stops defensively and get the go-ahead buckets offensively, it was just a great thing to see. And Toyota Center was rocking, man. They were the crowd was hype. And I mean, everybody was behind KPJ when he hit the three, the dagger to close it, and then the lob from Jalen Green to KPJ was just like the exclamation point just to seal the deal. It was a really awesome feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Prod, over to you. You know, what are your feelings? What are your initial takeaways from this game? How did you feel about that stretch kind of in the fourth quarter as well? You know, really take it away from there?
I mean, that last stretch with that unit that you mentioned, it's the ideal thing to have around Chengun, right? You're running Chengun, and then you're running three guys that are going to hustle a lot and are going to cut and be smart about it in Christopher, Jayshon, and KJ. And then you have Matthews, who's a shooter who's great at spacing the floor and can run plays with Chengun at the top of the key as well. So considering Chengun was taking that game really personal and on the defensive side of the ball, he was holding his own against, I think mostly Malik he was guarding. And a real quick takeaway from that, Chengun did a much better job on Malik than Christian Wood did, and to me that was really impressive. But yeah, that was it's just a lineup that's tailor-made for to play around Chengun. And I think we've seen a variation of it without Christopher and with Armani Brooks work before, and I really like the adjustment that Armani's not having the greatest of seasons, just Christopher is earning his minutes, so I really like that Salas is moving back towards giving Christopher more minutes. And then about the game, it's just, I'll be honest, I missed the third quarter, so when the Rockets took the lead the first time, I wasn't watching it, my internet was having some issues. But man, was it nice to I looked at the box score at halftime. I saw Jalen Green was leading us in scoring. And I was like, nice, he's finally stepping up. This means something to the fans. So it's a great game for him to choose to step up in. And then, I mean, everybody, Josh Christopher had a good game in my opinion. Tate got us through that stretch with that lineup that you were saying, and he made his usual tough buckets that nobody is expecting him to. Like, he goes on a run and scored like 6 points.
Some of those on Evan Mobley too. He snuck a couple past Evan Mobley during that stretch.
Exactly.
Jayshon had the most Jayshon Tate-esque like stat line ever, because you look up and it was, you know, 6 points, 5 boards, 2 assists, 4 steals, like just, you know, doing all the little dirty stuff that he's got to do. And that's, you know, just a testament to who he is as a player, right? He doesn't care if he's got the flashiest stat line, but he came up with the big time defensive stops and steals down the stretch when they needed him. And he had those timely buckets, you know, as you alluded to, on Evan Mobley, which was also entirely impressive, being able to be a 6'4 forward scoring on, you know, a 7 foot, you know, defensive stalwart like Evan Mobley.
Yeah. And to that point, let me say this real quick. To that point, right, you know, we've heard the Cavs have Mobley, they have Allen, just this totally intimidating rim protection unit there. And the Rockets still managed to put up 50 points in the paint. And all of those weren't on Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, right? And they did do a decent job kind of getting those guys out towards the perimeter to avoid having to, you know, go up against them straight up. But, you know, that's what this Rockets team really does. This Rockets team wants to get into the paint, do a lot of scoring there between Şengün, Jayshon Tate, Josh Christopher likes to get in the paint. KJ obviously likes to get in the paint. Jalen and KPJ, you know, those are really drive first guys, you know, in theory. So being able to be this aggressive and get to the rim against this Cavaliers team, you know, I just had someone respond to one of my tweets and they said, hey, you know, we could have this go back and forth for the next, you know, 15 years with Jalen and Evan Mobley, right? And it's very good to see that they are still able to get into the paint against this Cavaliers team.
Yeah, and they got to the paint in such, I mean, it was really noticeable how they did it. First, one of the bigs that I can't remember if it was Mobley or Allen was in foul trouble from the get-go. They got him, they got one of them in foul trouble really early on. Then they were shooting, I mean, decently well from the three-point line, so they had to respect it. And then their guards that were playing, Sadie Osman, Goodwin or whatever his name is, and
Goodwin.
And Okoro's a good defender, but the other two aren't. And they're not. You can have the best rim protection in the league, and you will get the Jazz, and that's the case as well. But if your perimeter defenders are always getting beat, and then it gets tougher. And the other thing, well,
Lamar
really
Stevens
well
had was, four fouls for them as well. I think three of those are pretty early on. I think he had three in the first quarter, if I'm not mistaken. Two or three in the first quarter.
Yeah, and I made a tweet about this as well. It felt like for a moment there, when there weren't great shooters on the floor, that unit that you mentioned, they just scored like 5, 6, or 7 reverse layups in a row. And the good thing about reverse layups is the rim is protecting your shot from being blocked by the shot blocker, right? So they did well to recognize that, and they were falling, and that was a key part of them the winning the game as well. But to me, the biggest thing about this game is not Jalen Green, it's not Christian Wood, even though we'll probably talk about him later. To me, it's definitely KPJ. He had another game with 7 assists, only 2 turnovers. He said after the game that he wanted to score 60 against this Cavs team. And even though he said that and he had that mentality, he took one shot, I think, in the first quarter. Like, he had that mentality, but he didn't let that get in the way of him playing good basketball and making the right decisions. He was not forcing it. He took his shots when they came to him. And that's really good development from a guy who most of his development has to come from what's in his head. So
it's
I was
worth
really
noting,
impressed by
it,
that.
It's worth noting on the KPJ angle that he did say that, because I was the one that asked him, because he didn't take his second shot until halfway through the second quarter. So I asked him, I was like, hey, what was your mindset coming into the game? Was it to just come in and be the primary facilitator and really focus on getting others involved? And that's why he came back and said, actually, my mindset coming in was to drop 60 and beat James Harden's record. And he got a good chuckle out of all of us in the press room. But, you know, he followed up by saying essentially that, you know, he went out there with that mentality, but then the moment, you know, the game started and he's, you know, out there and he's seeing some of these teammates, guys that he hasn't spoken to or seen since the trade, and they're on the court with him. And he basically said he psyched himself out, which is why, you know, he made that first three, and you could tell that there were some jitters there because he banked it in. And
yeah,
Steven Silas and KPJ, but they both had a chuckle about that, about, you know, about the way that shot went in. But then after that, you know, he said he was chatting with, you know, kind of talking back and forth with, you know, the Cavaliers guys. And he kind of said that he got into his own head about it and psyched himself out a little bit, which is why he wasn't nearly as aggressive in that first quarter. But then, you know, he gets subbed out, has his first rest of the game, comes back in, and his mindset was, you know, better after that. But he still didn't have that aggressive mindset of it's going to be me against them 1v5. Like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get 30 or 40. And I'm going to drop, you know, a big game on them. He played a good brand of basketball. He played competent. He played composed. And I think that's the biggest thing is in this, you know, like you said, Prod, just with a guy that's had so many question marks, so many concerns about, you know, his mentality and how he approached and how he just kind of, you know, composes himself on and off the basketball court, to see this game and to see, you know, the emotional stakes that we're riding on this game, but to see him come out and be like steady for this team, that's huge for KPJ and for his development and growth.
Yeah, I think the final frontier for KPJ in this game is, you know, making not all of his free throws, but, you know, a better percentage of his free throws. He went 1 for 4. Definitely could have shot 3 of 4 there and looked even better. But overall,
that's kind of a fix,
agree.
Though, because yeah. I talked to on the spaces. I don't know if you were there at the time. I talked to Rush about it. He said he's going to have a talk with him like he did with Christian Wood. So I think that's going to be fixed as well. I mean, it's a guard. He's got to be at least a 70% free throw shooter. And he's been his entire career just this year. He's slumping. So I think Rush is on it. I think it's going to be all right.
That was an amazing double callback you just did right there. I'm very impressed. So yeah, just final thoughts on this again, right?
No, because you brought up that you know, the lineup with Şengün, the bench guys kind of all being played together, and I do think it was interesting that the way Silas kind of had to modify his substitution patterns in recent games, it's felt like he's basically treated Jae'Sean Tate and KJ Martin as like one type of like an archetype of player, to where he tends to only have one of them on the floor at the same time. And we saw a lot of both of them on the floor at the same time in this game because of the way that his rotations were staggered in a different pattern with Christian Wood and Alpi actually sharing minutes on the floor. And I do think that some of those lineups featuring Jae'Sean and KJ Martin, yeah, it leaves a little bit wanting in you know, in the regard for shooting, but those guys are both such, you know, adequate cutters, and they're both adept at moving without the basketball and cutting towards the rim, that when you have them on the floor with LP, as well as having a shooter out there like Garrison Matthews and a willing shooter and a capable shooter like Josh Christopher, although his, you know, the numbers weren't flashy in this game, but he's been a competent shooter as of late. I think it does kind of space the floor out and provide, you know, a very interesting lineup makeup where they can do some really exciting things there. And having kind of Jay Sean and KJ out there as both kind of energy, like, you know, wrecking ball type guys who are going to blow up plays defensively and get out and transition offensively and, you know, cut hard when Şengün has the basketball. I think it led to a lot of productivity for the Rockets. And I really do like that. And hopefully we see more of that moving forward.
And it's a good breath of fresh air, those two guys, because with the Harden era, we're really used to guys that can only do two things. They can defend, they can shoot threes, or they can rim roll and they can protect the rim. And those two guys in specific, and Christopher's getting to it as well, are guys that project to be role players and project to be able to play with an heliocentric type guy still, but they've got a lot more to their game. And they can attack closeouts, they can make the next pass, they can shoot, they can defend as well, they can take people off the dribble if need be, they can get to the rim, and it doesn't have to be a dunk or a strong hand layup. They can get reverse layups, they're met at the rim, they can bang a little bit with the center and get a little hook shot in. KJ as well, who uses his athleticism for that really well. It's good to see that these guys that we're drafting and that we're developing as role players still have that versatility, and they're not pigeonholed into like one archetype.
Yeah, and KJ Martin had a really good drive in the fourth quarter, the beginning of the fourth quarter, where left-handed, you know, put a little hesitation on there, looked like he was going to stumble and then end up getting into the rim. And I think that was one of the ones he ended up making a reverse layup on. So that handle development is going to be so critical for KJ, because when you're that explosive, if you can just get your shoulder by a guy and, you know, elevate, it's pretty much game over for anyone. That's a great place to take a break really quick. When we come back, we're going to do brief two segments of mailbag, just kind of, you know, get things rolling. You know, this is a very critical time for the Rockets with the trade deadline coming up. So we're going to answer a few questions that were thrown our way today. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And we're back. So, like we said, rolling into some mailbag questions here. First question we have, and I just want to say, we are raising our game today. We got just a little bit of production value for you guys. So hopefully everyone on the YouTube audience will enjoy this. So here we go. Ta-da! I'm so impressed
with
myself. I'm so impressed with myself. All right. So our first question is from friend of the show, Madison at Madman Leaks. How do you guys feel about Jalen Green's response to the shooting slump? You know, Jalen has been struggling for a while. We all kind of went through that. I know Jackson did a space a couple of weeks ago, or I guess about a week ago now, where it just got completely derailed into, is Jalen Green gonna not be Jordan Clarkson? Like, I think, you know, after last night's game, hopefully we've taken a step back from the Jordan Clarkson
as edge. Don slides back in his chair to illustrate taking a step back, just doing everything, just catering straight to the visual audience, huh, Don?
I'm trying to work the visual audience in as well, but yeah, so take
we're
a step
gonna,
back.
We're gonna
from
change
the
your name
Clarkson
to YouTube
led.
Don Knock now. That's what you are. You're not Hollywood Don Knock anymore. You're YouTube Don Knock. I need the name changed on Twitter ASAP.
Okay, I'll get that going after we're already finished. But yeah, so. We take a step back from the Jordan Clarkson ledge, and man, you know, Jalen, what did Jalen shoot from three in this game?
Shot
3 of 7, 42%. This is a good percentage. He hit a step back in this game, got to the rim in this game, and you know, the handle was looking nice and tight. I think his response to the shooting slump was very good, especially like we kind of outlined in the first segment. this Cavaliers team is supposed to be, you know, the Titans of all rim protection type of team. And you look good, you look confident. Jackson, you know, go ahead.
You know, I think that ultimately, and this was something that, you know, maybe it was, you know, I kind of mocked it up to be like a confidence thing with Jaylen, where, you know, at times it felt like, you know, he wasn't nearly as confident in what he was doing on the floor. And so when I prompted Steven Silas for an answer on how big this type of game is for Jaylen moving forward and whether or not this can be something that he can use to build his confidence going forward, Steven Silas was basically like, I mean, it's a good game. And he had a really, really quality night. Like, I mean, he was like, he had a really good game, but he basically said, Jaylen never lacks for confidence. Like, Jaylen's confidence is always sky high. He always does, you know, believe in himself. The work ethic is there, all of that. And so maybe, you know, confidence wasn't exactly what was going on. Silas did say that, you know, at times his shot does waver. And so I think that, you know, maybe this is hopefully on the trend where, you know, it was just a shooting slump and, you know, he was in a shooting rut, which happens from time to time with players. And because he was in the shooting slump, he wasn't able to get, you know, nearly the consistency, you know, strung together with some of his buckets. Players kind of maybe playing off of him a little bit, that kind of thing, and, you know, not being as aggressive attacking the rim. But this was just a good overall game to see, right? He just kind of tapped into a bit of that bag that we've been missing over these last, you know, few weeks or so. First time he's gone for 20 plus since early January, and, you know, it really felt like he was just kind of scoring in a variety of ways. We saw him breaking down guys off the dribble. We saw him, you know, I think he had that one play where he like completely crossed up Isaac Okoro and got to the rim, which it's been, I think, a while since we've seen Jaylen like really make something happen, like off the dribble, with like creating something off the dribble rather than just using his like explosiveness to just blast by somebody right in transition or even in the half court. If he's just, you know, 1-2 dribbles and then he's just, you know, by them and at the rim, versus this one where he really like kind of crossed up Isaac Okoro, put a couple dribble moves together, and then got to the rim and finished with a very clean layup that resulted in an and one early in that first quarter. So I think the response has been great. You know, I think that at times we do forget he's 19 years old. He's a kid, right? He's still like, dude, if I look back at like what I was like at 19, like I can't even imagine what Jaylen Green's, you know, going through, right? All the pressure in the world on this kid, you know, the weight of a franchise on him, the shadow of James Harden lingering over his shoulders as an, you know, also being a two guard playing for the Houston Rockets organization. Like, there's a lot of pressure on this guy. And yeah, I think that, you know, he hasn't quite delivered to some of the expectations that, you know, fans, you know, had for him coming into the season. But I think you still have to be really optimistic about what he's got going forward. And, you know, a response like this, getting up for the big game against Evan Mobley, another, you know, high ranking rookie, that's encouraging stuff to see.
Yeah. And I mean, you said you didn't know what you were doing at 19. Dude, I don't know what I was doing last year either, but no, but about Jaylen, I have a theory, and I don't think it's confidence. I think when he came into the NBA, he was, how do I say this? He was worrying not to take bad shots. And some of the shots that he took in the G League were indeed bad shots for the NBA standard, but he was making them. And those are important shots to get him going. Maybe not a confident thing, but like a fluidity thing. So he feels in rhythm. And he's not been taking them. And we saw last night, once again, the start of a little bit of that, of him being a little bit more creative. What he's done since he got into the shooting slump, and for the longest time before it as well, when his percentages didn't look great, was he was limiting himself to spot up threes, like pull up threes, sprinkle a little step back some games, or he was like straight drive to the rim, try to dunk on you, or like just get like hacked at me there and just not too much. He, in the summer league and in G League, he was a completely different player. He was owning up to being the best player on the floor, and he was acting like it. And it seems like with the Rockets right now, there doesn't seem to be much of a hierarchy, and he doesn't feel like he's free, at least in my opinion. Of course, it's like I'm doing like the weird thing about analyzing someone's behavior and without actually knowing, but it feels like he's afraid of stepping out of line. I don't feel like he feels he has the freedom to do whatever he wants. Even if he does, he's scared to do so. And I think when he starts doing that, and he did that a little bit this game, and he's done it pretty much against, I mean, against KD, the same thing. Every time it's a personal game, it seems like he takes a challenge more and tries to do more creative stuff. But I think
maybe it's not
getting comfortable.
Fear, right? Like I think like being afraid, or you know, the fear of it has like a really negative connotation behind it. But I think it falls into something that we've talked about before, is the fact that there's not a natural hierarchy on this Rockets team, and that there's not a clearly defined pecking order. And at times it boils down to just Jalen over defers at times to Christian Wood, to KPJ, to Eric Gordon, right? Trying not to step on the toes of the veterans on this roster. And I think even in this game, right, we saw there was a play where Jalen kind of, he was actually trying to set up a wiper play for him and for Kevin Porter Jr., I believe. And the play got blown up, and he kind of like, you know, rolled it, you know, basically rolled his arms because Şengün like ran up to like set a screen for, I believe it was either Kevin Porter Jr. or Eric Gordon that had the ball, and Şengün ran out and set a screen instead. Whereas Jalen was getting ready to run out there and set, you know, basically do the wiper action at the end of the quarter. And Jalen kind of like, you know, rolled his arms in exasperation a little bit. And I think that got misconstrued as like him being frustrated with Eric Gordon, whereas he was being frustrated with Alper and Şengün and actually kind of messing up that play right there. And then there was another one a little bit later where this was the one that Christian Wood hit the little push shot as the first response as part of the Rockets 10-0 run to close the game. And KPJ was actually setting up a dribble handoff and a give and go with Kevin Porter Jr. Or sorry. Yeah. Jalen Green, Kevin Porter Jr. Sorry. I'm getting my names mixed up. And unfortunately, like Christian Wood basically found himself like right in the middle of that give and go. And so Christian took the pass and then just like ran it in, and, you know, he managed to score the ball, but that was a play very much like set up for Jalen and KPJ. So, you know, I just think it's one of those things where like, as Jalen realizes, like he is kind of needs to be like the de facto, like maybe not number one option, but that he is like that guy in comparison to the other guys on the roster, then maybe some of that fluidity and, you know, willingness to just know, like, I want the ball now. Like I'm capable of doing stuff with it. Give me the ball, and kind of demanding it a little bit more will become more second nature to him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's not only with Jalen. Even with KPJ, who has the ball all the time. If you look at KPJ this year versus KPJ last year he did a lot more like highlight worthy, go for crazy shots, step backs, crossovers. They're doing a lot less of that now. And it feels like they're striving to play a brand of basketball that's good, and that's, I'll call it, healthy for everyone, where everybody gets the ball because there's so many mouths to feed. That's why I don't want to judge Silas, and I did before like 3-4 months ago, but I've made the decision to not judge anything we see until the deadline, because once some of these vets go, and hopefully they do, we'll finally have more space for them to not only take the good shots and the team-oriented shots, but to sparkle in some spice of their own, let's call it that.
All right. So let me see. Yeah, I think we'll push, this is about 10 minutes in this one, we'll push the next three questions, the next segment. They should be a little bit shorter. So just to conclude, yeah, you know, the original question, how do you feel about Jalen Green shooting slump? I think we all feel pretty good. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with the final three mailbag questions in just 1 second.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And welcome back for our final segment here at the Launchpad Podcast. So, our next question is from at 2017 World Series Champions. Will we get more Dacian Nix after the deadline? And what do you see his long-term development look like? Prod, you're more of the development guy. I think you've watched a little bit more of the Vipers than I have. You know, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about Dacian Nix?
Listen, I'm so excited by even if you don't watch him play, and if you do, you realize like he would be the best passer on this team if he played. Like better than Augustine, obviously better than Gordon, better than KPJ. Just makes the right reads.
Better
He's
than
really
Shingun?
Stable with the ball. That's tough because it's a different kind of passer, right? It's hard to compare. Like Jokic
no. You said best passer on the team. We have these receipts.
Putting me on the spot.
Yes, I am. Okay. I do agree. Nation Knicks is a very quality passer. Yes.
Make yourself in trouble with our Turkish fans.
No, he's not better than Shingun.
There you
but
go.
He's averaging,
walk
I think,
that bad
20,
boy back.
Like, around 25, like 6 and 7 or whatever in the G League on really good shooting splits besides his free throw shooting. So if you just look at that, and then you take into consideration this guy's 19 years old, and just last year, Jalen averaged like 16, I think, 4 and 3 in the G League on similar splits and a lot lower volume. And he was a top 2, in this case, but consensus top 3 pick, right? If this guy was up to be drafted right now, averaging what he's averaging in the same competition as I don't know, Jaden Hardy, who's projected to be a top 10 pick next year, he would be drafted lottery for sure. And it's not as strong of a draft as it was last year, but that speaks volumes that the Rockets have a potential lottery talent this year on a two-way playing for this G League team. Then this is might be a hot take, but this is my opinion. And so if it were up to me, he would play, and he'd probably be playing already. And because maybe not already, but past the deadline, he'll be playing 100%, because if it were up to me, I'd move a lot of guys. But I think, and I hope, and this is the clearest path for him to find these minutes, is I hope he keeps tearing it up in the T League, and kind of like Garrison Matthews, it reaches a point where, hey, this guy's showing a lot of potential, and even if we wanted to, we can't afford to leave this guy in the T League any longer, so we'll have to bring him up and give him like the Hinkie special and guaranteed contract, just because he's showing this much, and if he hits free agency at 19/20 years old, someone's going to pay him. And yeah, so my hope is hopefully he keeps playing this well, and they have no other choice other than to promote him and play him with that second unit. And other than that, you can stagger, you want to stagger Jalen and KPJ, right? Knicks is perfect for you to stagger and play in the second unit with Jalen when you're staggering him and KPJ, right? He can mirror whatever minutes KPJ is playing and play the same role. And then you move, Christopher mainly plays the 3 at this point, and I think you can definitely do that. Besides this, he's sneaky athletic, and he's got a really like big frame, like Eric Gordon type, really strong guard. He's 6'5", so he has the size. It's a really exciting prospect that the Rockets just somehow, the scouting team found him. Maybe they paid so much attention to the G League because Jalen was there that they found this guy. And I mean, he's been awesome, and he's been someone I believe can bring that stability that DJ Augustin brings when he's on the floor.
Jackson, go ahead. What are your thoughts on Knicks?
I haven't watched Knicks nearly as much as I should have. I've only caught, you know, a couple of Vipers games in part, not even like full ones. But the flashes that I've seen from him, the highlights that I've seen from him, I mean, he looks incredible. I think that it is another one of those kind of diamond in the rough type finds for this Rockets front office, where they're just, you've got to be really confident from the like talent evaluation, like perspective of the front office and what they're able to do in finding these guys. And having a guy like Dacian Nix, you know, on a two-way and seeing the type of production that he's putting forth right now, you have to be really excited about what that's going to potentially look like post-deadline. I say potentially just because, as confident as I am that Eric Gordon's going to get moved, it's still not certainty, right? And so unless, you know, if Eric Gordon for some reason doesn't get moved this deadline, then that clearly, like, it doesn't suddenly open up more minutes for a guy like Dacian Nix to come up and, you know, play, get some NBA reps with the rest of the guys. But hopefully, you know, if Eric Gordon is moved, which is, I think, the right decision and the one that the franchise should make, then, you know, that opens up a spot kind of in the guard rotation for Dacian Nix to come up and absorb some minutes, because conceivably you kind of, you know, you slide in Garrison Matthews as like the starting three, and then you've got, you know, a whole, you know, 25 to 30 minutes a night that you're trying to make up for with no more Eric Gordon. And those could easily be minutes that are evenly distributed amongst Dacian Nix, Josh Christopher, KJ Martin, more Garrison minutes, more minutes for KPJ, Jalen Green, however you want to move it around. And maybe you kind of move things to where Dacian Nix is only getting like the spot 10 to 15 minutes a night that kind of Josh Christopher is getting right now. And then you're able to bump Josh Christopher's minutes totals a little bit higher, that kind of thing. But I'm excited at the possibility for him to continue to showcase what he's been doing so far in the G League, but at the NBA level this next half of the season.
All right. So we're going to go to our next question. And this is another guard related question. We'll see if it's what you guys think it is, but from RB 2710, do you still take Ivy in the draft if given the chance, or do you stick with KPJ at point guard? Jackson, we'll go to you first.
Well, right now my big board is Jabari Smith number one, Chet number two, Jaden Ivy number three, and Banchero number four. So
okay,
in this hypothetical, if the Rockets were at pick number three, yes, I would still take Jaden Ivey. Now, again, you know, so like if we're, you know, the spot where Jaden Ivey's, you know, the prospect, the top prospect on my big board or whatever, then yeah, I'm taking Jaden Ivey, even with KPJ, you know, showcasing his talents at this point as a lead guard. And I think maybe lead guard is the better terminology, right, for KPJ at this point, because I think that, you know, by trying to box him into the point guard, you know, label, I think it's a disservice to what he truly provides, right? Because nobody looks at, you know, James Harden and says, oh, he's a point guard, right? He's a lead guard. He has the ball in his hands all the time. Luka Doncic isn't a point guard. He's a lead guard. So, like, they're guys that you put the ball in their hands, and they're the ones dominating the ball for, you know, majority of the game, creating, facilitating for others, leveraging their threat to score the basketball, all those different things. And I think Jaden Ivey is that same kind of prototype, right? He's a lead guard. You put the ball in his hands, he's going to be able to create for others. I think he's shown a lot of promise at the collegiate level right now as a creator, using his athleticism to get to the rim and create for others. And I think that's a skill that's going to translate really, really well at the NBA level. But that said, you take best player available, and, you know, to me in the draft, you take the best player available, you figure out the fit later on. I think maybe there's a little bit of a, you know, toss up there between Ivy and Banchero as far as like, yeah, if the Rockets are really, you know, confident in what they've got with KPJ at the end of the season, then yeah, maybe you take that into account a little bit, but I still have Ivy ahead of Banchero right now on my big board. So yeah, I'd go there.
You know, Jaden Ivey's also coming off that big game winner he had last weekend. So very impressive shot by him. Prod, you know, what are your thoughts on Ivey giving the KPJ?
Okay, so for me, it's going to be completely different. I do agree that you take best player available, but ultimately it comes down to how do you view these prospects, right? And the decision will ultimately be based around how the Rockets view these prospects. For me, I have, and this is going to be funny because it's so different, I have Banchero number one, I have Jabari number two, I have Chet number three, I have Ivy number four. So this question only comes up for me at pick four. If I'm at pick four, I would rather move down to, and trade down if it's possible, to 5, 6, or 7, because any of Benedict Mathurin or AJ Griffin to me are really big hits, and if Shaedon Sharpe is still draft eligible and you can trade down and still get a guy like that, then I do that as well, just because I think the first tier is Jabari, Chet, Banchero, and after that the tier changes for me.
See, that's where we differ. I've got Jaden Ivey in that first tier. I think this is a top four draft, just like last year you'd argue was a top four, maybe a top five draft, depending on how heavily you viewed, or, you know, how Scottie favorably Barnes. You viewed Kuminga. Well, I was going to say Kuminga, right?
Okay. Kuminga, yeah.
Yeah.
Makes
so,
sense.
Because, you know, there was a lot of, you know, scuttlebutt about whether Kuminga was actually, like, you know, in the same tier as those other guys in the top five. But yeah, so, I mean, for me, it's like, you know, I think this year is a clear top four draft. I think Ivy's just as good as those other prospects right now, for me personally.
All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Let me just say one more thing. To me, the thing about Ivy is you see a lot of Ja Morant in him, but you also see a lot of Russell Westbrook where he's driving really fast and gets out of control. And then you're trusting a lot and he's shooting like lights out, I think 40%+ from three. And he's a guy whose free throw percentage doesn't match that and whose past career experience also does not match that. This is the first time that he's shot this well. And then, but then you can say, hey, Davion Mitchell was also like a one guy that only shot well 1 year and he's coming into the NBA and I think he's doing fine, right? So it's a big gamble, but that being a gamble is what makes him slide one more tier, because I'm fairly certain that the top three guys will all work out in their different ways. So that's most of the issue for me. And yeah, I think there's no wrong answer to this question. I think it will ultimately depend how that board looks for the Rockets. And I think as long if you're not dropping down a tier within the same tier, it's fine to draft for fit. If you're dropping a tier, then you should not draft for fit.
Also, clearly, right. there are wrong answers, because have we not looked at Rockets Twitter after the whole Mobley Mob, you know, Green Gang debate? There are very clearly wrong answers here, Prod. Come on, get with the program, man.
All right. So we are going to go to our final question from friend of the show,
Stormy.
At Stormy. Do you think the lack of a real offseason during the rebuild has really adversely impacted all of your sleep? So I will go first. Yes. I like my 9 hours. I do not get that anymore due to various.
Nine? That's a lot.
That's what I think Luke Bamute, when he was on the Rockets, said he was getting like 12. So, you know, that's goals right there. I would love to get to 12. Sadly, cannot do that just based on, you know, life. But yeah, doing the spaces, doing the pods. The pods, not as much. You can usually knock these out fairly quickly. The spaces, you know, watching the games, trying to get some scouting stuff in. The scouting really, like, I mean, because normally I'd have days where it's like, okay, the Rockets don't play today. We're not doing any content. You know, I can just kind of take off. But now it's like, hey, let me try to watch some of Ivy or Banchero or Jabari or someone, just try to like fill that extra time. So there's never really like a downtime. It's always like I'm either working on something or like I'm making a deliberate choice that, hey, you know, I'm pushing it a little bit close to the limit here. Maybe I take a day and kind of relax and reset. So that's how I view it. Yes, it's adversely impacted my sleep, but at the same time, you know, I can talk about the Rockets all day. I can look at Rockets content all day. So it's not to, you know, complete detriment. Jackson, go to you next.
No, yeah. I mean, it definitely has a little bit. I think it's actually really funny. For me personally, also shout out Stormy, good friend of LOR as well. You know, for me,
Stormy's everybody's friend.
He is. He's an all around swell guy. But for me personally, I haven't gotten a true, like, normal off season ever since inheriting and taking over LOR, because what happened is, you know, we had the NBA shutdown, and that was my first season hosting LOR. So in that period of time, that, you know, from March to the NBA restart at the end of July, we had no idea what was going on with sports. And we were kind of in this weird holding pattern where we were like, okay, well, there's no, like, we're not doing off-season content, which has like a normal like flow and pattern to it. We were like coming up with like random content, like doing like hypotheticals and like, you know, NBA 2K simulated seasons and stuff like that. It was such a trip. And like doing, you know, fun guest shows and just, you know, all kinds of like, you know, Rockets retrospectives and stuff. So that was kind of weird, because no actual off-season content. Then we go to, you know, the actual off-season, which is super condensed going into the first COVID season. Then we have this past off season, which was so heavily focused on draft content and all this other stuff. You know, it's been a weird change of pace. But there's definitely a lot of work to be done when you're a team that's in a rebuild. And I think a lot of like the fun times are leading into the off season, like the speculation around the draft and all this stuff. And having gone through that cycle once now, I now have a better like grasp and understanding of how to tackle it moving forward. So hopefully, it'll be better content moving forward, and I'll still be able to get those 8 or 9 hours of sleep a night this next time around. So we'll see.
I mean, sleep, what's sleep? No, I'm joking. It's 2:18 right now while we're recording. When we do spaces, it gets even later. We like the spaces are after the games and the games are at the end late. No, but it's the way I manage it is I'm in college, so I can just for like make my schedule whatever I want, as long as I'm willing to put the work behind it, right? So I live in an American time zone while being in Portugal. And what that means is the morning doesn't exist for me. I wake up, I have lunch, I do college stuff, and then I have dinner, and I do some other stuff, and then it's basketball time, right? So that's the way I manage it.
As someone that has to wake up at like 4 a.m. all the time, trust me, you're not missing much between like 4 and 7 U.S. time.
Yeah,
tweet something out, and you're like, "There's no bangers happening at like 5:30 a.m." I'm trying.
No. Yeah, so basically, I don't really lose sleep. I just sleep at different times, and I never get to 9 hours of sleep. That's a lot of sleep, dude. I get like 7-8 on a good day. If Ryan Hollins doesn't decide to show up on the space, I get 7-8 hours. If not, I'll just find some time throughout the day to catch up on some sleep. Yeah, it's worth it, dude. It's, what we do is awesome, and it never felt like a job. It's like the one rule I've always had is if it's not fun, it's not worth it, and it's always been fun. And it's with us moving into a rebuild, there's so much new stuff to learn, so it keeps getting exciting, right? If we were contending for like, I don't know, 3 more years, it probably would get boring. But since we're learning stuff on the fly so much, it's always entertaining. And when it's entertaining and you love what you're doing, don't really mind the sleep loss.
And I just want to say like one other thing about that. You know, like you say, I get to learn all this new stuff and stuff like that. And for me, one of the things that's awesome about like doing all the basketball content and then just like, you know, having more followers than I used to and stuff like that is that, you know, I can always just tweet some stuff out. You know, maybe if it's not 5 or 6 in the morning or whatever, I can tweet some stuff out and I'm going to have someone that's right there to, you know, talk to about it, or even in, like in some of the group chats I'm in, post them in the group chat and people are there to talk about it. So there's never a dull moment. It's also like, I'm someone like full disclosure, like I have ADHD like crazy. So my mind just going nonstop. And so I always have ideas about different things. So it's awesome to have like so many other Rockets fans that are like just as passionate. They can go back and forth, you know, whether we agree or not. Right. Like sometimes it's just fun to go back and forth on someone you don't even agree with. But yeah, when sometimes you can't sleep or whatever the case may be, you have that option too. Right. Just leaning into the amazing Rockets, Twitter, Rockets, you know, the peripheral Rockets as well. Like we have r/Rockets that Stormy's from, Clutch Fans, all those different sites. You know, you always have someone there to talk Rockets basketball. So, but that's going to do it for us tonight. As always, you can follow me at Don Knock. You can follow the pod at Apollo Launchpad. You can follow the Apollo HOU main account. You can follow Apollo HOU on Twitch. I think I got everything there. Paolo Alves, I'm going back to my structure from earlier. Go ahead and tell them when they can find your not so recently renovated Twitter page.
Y'all can find me at Paul Alves NBA. That's PAULOALVES NBA. Everything I do, from podcasts to live shows to articles, we find itself linked on there. And a little bit of a teaser, I might or might not be starting a new podcast hosted by myself for the first time. So be on the lookout for that.
Ooh, exciting stuff.
Good vet move there with the tease. Jackson, the king of all vets, go ahead and tell people where they can find your great work at.
Just at JT Gatlin on Twitter. That's where I post everything.
Perfect. So that's going to do it for us. Until next time. And hey, next time we're speaking to you guys, it's going to be, you know, trade deadline, absolute crunch time. So, you know, great time to be a Rockets fan. Hopefully they do some exciting stuff here at the deadline. And until next time, y'all, be safe and go Rockets.